You are listening to Speak Up Arkansas with Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families. I'm Rebecca Zerman. There are a lot of factors that go into ensuring that kids are healthy, both now and into adulthood. And children are especially vulnerable to environmental health issues like air pollution that can cause lasting health problems. From water quality to chemicals used in everyday products, there are many environmental health issues impacting kids, both in Arkansas and across the country. Today, we are joined by two guests who will talk about those issues and what parents and schools can do to help ensure a healthy environment for kids. Richard Mays is an attorney at Williams and Anderson focusing on environmental law, and Dr. Gary Wheeler is the chief medical officer at the Arkansas Department of Health. Thank you both for joining us today. Can we start by y'all giving a little bit of overview of your work and how it relates to environmental health?
I'll go first. This is Gary. I work at the Arkansas Department of Health. We have a large branch that's responsible for doing environmental health monitoring, things along the lines of water testing, and we also are very active in the larger global area of protecting the citizens of Arkansas from health risk. So while we have designated programs, we are also monitoring new developments in the field of environmental health.
Well, I'm Richard Mays, and I'm in a law firm, Williams and Anderson, and we I do environmental law, and that runs a spectrum of advising clients about what environmental regulations say and mean and how to comply with them. If they get into trouble, we sometimes try to help them get out of it with the least possible ramifications. And sometimes I particularly have a fairly large number of environmental organizations that I represent, and we sometimes file lawsuits against violators of environmental laws to bring them into compliance and to require them to pay penalties or to get them to comply with whatever the regulations are that they're violating. It's an interesting practice. I like it a lot because I feel good about it. I used to be with the Environmental Protection Agency for 8 years, and I guess I got so enamored with with what the agency did that I wanted to continue it, and I tried to the best of my ability, and it works out pretty well. I'm enjoying it.
Well, good. You've been doing it for 40 years, you told me earlier, so it's good that you enjoy your work.
I've been practicing longer than that. I've been doing environmental law for 40 years. Yeah, it's a long time.
So researching for this show, it seems like environmental health is kind of a nebulous term. How would you define environmental health?
Well, this is Richard again. I think environmental health is just a general concept is to try to develop laws and regulations that attempt to achieve across the board, that is in the general public, across the board, improvement in health and safety. And we have a lot of regulations, not only in the environmental field, but in the food field and in other areas that appliances, for example, the consumer safety product, Consumer Product Safety Agency regulates the safety of toys and products that we use in our homes. So the country actually has a very broad spectrum of environmental health, if you consider the word environmental in a broad sense, in terms of just the narrow sense of our ambient environment. We have a lot of regulations that EPA and other agencies put out that regulate us and try to keep us in the best possible physical and mental condition.
I think that what's transformed this concept is the fact that health used to be thought of as determined by your own personal activity, genetics, and what you inherited. And environmental health was anything externally that impacted on that. Mm-hmm. I think that's not a bad kind of approach to take. And if you think about the things that we need externally to live, you start talking about Maslow's concepts of, you know, you need air, water, shelter, safety, and those kind of things. Mm-hmm. So I think
that bottom tier.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's all those things in my mind.
What are some of the biggest environmental health concerns for children in this state? And are those unique to Arkansas?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think really we're not that different than the other states or other countries of the world. Probably the biggest thing or the first thing I'd put on my list right now is climate change. Mm-hmm. I think that we know that children are more vulnerable than adults, and they're the first ones to suffer. So climate change is number one on my list. But to give you an example of the broadness of environmental health, probably the second thing I'd put on my list is secondhand smoke. Mm-hmm. So if you live in an environment with somebody, whether you're in a car or a home or whatever, and you're being exposed, the consequences for children are quite dramatic. Clearly, the other things that we think about traditionally in this area in terms of air and water quality are issues that occur everywhere around the world. And I think that we're doing relatively well in those areas compared to a lot of other places around the country. But those are kind of the traditional top tier list of things that concern me about children's health.
Well, I would agree with that. Also, I think that we live in a world today that is highly complicated. We deal with a lot of products, a lot of things that are made of chemicals, and chemicals are highly beneficial to us. Obviously, I think Monsanto or DuPont said chemicals make life better, or something of that nature. But
I've seen that commercial.
Yeah, living better through chemicals. But you know, the problem is that you never know sometimes, or the manufacturers of these products sometimes don't know all of the potential effects of these chemicals and the products that are in them. And so you have to be very careful of, especially with children, because children are more susceptible to things in the environment than adults are. Their bodies are still being formed, their organs and their minds, and they're subject to all of these things that we get bombarded with as we go through our lives in the way of chemicals and health effects and the environment, climate change being one. And they are particularly, I think, at risk to whatever hazards may be out there. I think we have to be very judicious and circumspect about the things that we buy, the things we wear, the things that we eat and drink. Mm-hmm. And, you do your best, and you like to trust our food supply, and it is a good, we had probably the best food supply in the world and most safe food supply, but still,
except romaine, it seems like.
Yes, there are risks, and mm-hmm. children are particularly susceptible to whatever risks there are.
Well, that was my next question. I know you talked about that a bit, but do you have anything to add, Dr. Wheeler, in terms of why children are more susceptible to environmental health risks than adults?
Right. So there's a couple of different angles, and I really appreciate that Richard brought up the developing child. Children are literally growing in front of our eyes. They have a tremendous cellular turnover rate, and they incorporate things faster if they're exposed to them because of that. So if you're talking about chemicals, they are more likely to be affected by heavy metals and things like the lead. Mm-hmm. And we heard about the problems up in Michigan with the contamination of the city water supplies there and the tremendous impact that has on learning and brain development. So one issue is the rapid turnover of cells in a child. The second is just the size of the child. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about things like climate change, children are at an unfair disadvantage when it comes to things like heat and dehydration and a number of other issues like that. So they really are the sentinel chickens for our world, and it's very important that we monitor kids to see what's going on. The other thing I'll touch on that, again, Mr. Mays raised is this issue of how complex the world is and the interactions that we have. A lot of times we're only measuring a single element of our environment, and there may be multiple things going on at once that can be antagonistic to health. And I guess the final thing I'll say, there's so much we just don't know. I mean, who would have ever thought baby powder would have been an environmental risk? And for those of you who haven't heard, there's been recent lawsuits about asbestos contamination of baby powder, and Johnson & Johnson has been sued for that. And, you know, that's a product that I think almost everybody would have thought was the safest thing in the world. But again, the world's complicated. Contamination occurs easily, and kids in particular can be at risk.
You're listening to Speak Up Arkansas with Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families, and we are talking about environmental health, especially its impact on children. If you have any questions for our guests, you can give us a call at 433-0088. And so, the World Health Organization reported in 2017 that the number of children with asthma has been increasing worldwide. What causes asthma, and how does Arkansas's air quality contribute to that, and how does our air quality stack up with other states?
So I can talk just briefly about just air quality standardized measures, and there's multiple aspects of air quality. There's the particulate that's in the air. There's the sulfide compounds that are in the air. There's the carbon monoxide in the air, ozone in the air. All these things are pretty complicated. And the recent reports in Arkansas show that a lot of these issues are actually improving and have improved over time. Most of that is related to regulation of motor vehicles, not all of it. And there have, and Richard can talk more about the industry contributions to air quality and what changes have been made there. But that's probably one of the main things I think people should understand, that our air quality is pretty good if you look at it over an average area.
So the rates are decreasing?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, not rates of asthma, okay, but the quality of the air.
Okay.
If we talk about asthma, we're actually seeing increased rates of asthma across the country, mm-hmm, and we don't know exactly what all the issues are. Mm-hmm. It is a very complicated process. It's an inflammatory process. It can be triggered by allergens. And again, when we talk about climate change, we know that the allergens in the air are changing. That we're having much longer ragweed seasons because we have a much longer growing season now in the summer. So there are a lot of things like that. Insect populations can be important. Cockroaches are terribly important for the development of asthma in the inner city. So as we begin to see more and more infestations in older homes, that can be an issue as well. Mm-hmm. But
well, that's very interesting. I didn't know cockroaches contributed to asthma, and that's interesting. Our air is a lot cleaner than it used to be back 20, 30, 40 years ago. The Clean Air Act that we now have today was originally enacted in 1971, I believe, or 70. It was one of the earliest modern-day environmental laws that we have today. And it's a good law, very complicated, but it's been very effective. And the air is much better. It's surprising that we're seeing more asthma in mm-hmm. children, and there's got to be a reason for it. Part of it could be that there are more automobiles on the highways today than there ever have been before, and every family's got two or three automobiles, or a lot of them do, some don't, but Children breathe more air per pound of body weight than adults do, I believe. I'd have to defer to the doctor on
Absolutely
that.
Absolutely right, yeah.
And their lungs are developing, and one of the things that causes asthma, I think, or causes respiratory problems is particulate matter. Those are very small, fine particles in the air that are emitted by automobiles and by factories and all sorts of facilities. They're very fine grains of like soot and mm-hmm. stuff like that. And it could be that because we're having more industry, we have more businesses that emit particulate matters and other chemicals, sulfur dioxide, for example. Those things are probably harder to see, but they're harder to capture than they used to be. They used to only regulate larger particles of particulate matter.
So, is that what the scrubbers and things in smokestacks are supposed to do?
Yeah, smoke. Well, those get the larger particles.
Okay.
They have a thing called a PM2.5 rule that basically particles that are less that greater than 2.5 is it millimeter not millimeters
it's microns
microns mm-hmm. very small and you hard to see. You can't see them unless they're all a whole lot of them. You see haze and that sort of thing.
Okay.
But people breathe those things. They go down into the inner recesses of the lungs, and they're particularly hard on the lungs. They can also cause, I'm told they can cause heart problems as well and other types of things. So that may account for it. We have cleaned the air a lot, but we're not totally, the air is not pure. Mm-hmm. And that's probably the asthma and other lung diseases are probably caused by these smaller particles.
Right. And there can be, we've talked about sort of I've talked about geographic averages in terms of whether the air quality is good or not. Mm-hmm. You can absolutely get concentrations in certain areas. And one of the things we know is that, large transportation corridors are typically associated with large amounts of particulate and other air pollution. And we have good data that shows that that the people who live very proximal to those corridors have higher rates of disease.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, that's another thing that's not been clearly studied in terms of rates of asthma and that kind of thing.
When we talk about older houses, lead paint and asbestos are things that often come to mind. Are those common issues for Arkansas kids today, or are those mostly bigger issues from the past?
Yeah. When I was a younger person and I was taking my medical boards, and I'm a pediatrician, they showed x-rays to all the students that showed up at the exam. And all the students who were from up north got the question right, because it showed lead lines in the bone films of the example they used. None of us who lived in the south got the answer right. And that's partly, the housing structure that's been built in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
There's so much very old structure that has lead paint in it that was put up 100 years ago. And it tends to run in older urban neighborhoods. Because Arkansas is a relatively new state, we have less of our housing stock that was built during a time when lead paint was not prohibited.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you go into older neighborhoods in central Little Rock, yeah, you can find lead in the dirt around homes that, over the years have been sanded and painted and mm-hmm. sanded and painted. And if you have older homes, even in the internal, environment, that can happen as well. So it is an issue here. It's not as dramatic as it is in other places. And same thing with lead pipes.
We just have newer houses.
It's mostly we mm-hmm. have newer housing stock, but it can absolutely still be an issue.
Mm-hmm.
The Consumer Product Safety Commission banned lead in paint for residences and public buildings in 1977. So assuming that the painters complied with that ban and didn't use some paint illegally that had lead in it after 1977, mm-hmm. generally homes after that date would probably not have lead paint in them. However, there are a lot of houses still around that were built before that time. And if you buy a home that is older, that was built before 1977, you certainly ought to probably have a test to see if lead paint is in it. I'm told there are approximately 37 million homes in the United States that still have lead paint in them. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of homes. And a lot of them are, well, a proportionate part of them are here in Arkansas. So the children, of course, young children, especially babies and toddlers, if the paint is flaking off, they may get it and put it in their mouths or eat it, or just being subject, just touching it can possibly get some lead in them, not much, but eating it certainly would. And lead is very bad for the liver and the brain and all those other organs in the body. So mm-hmm. you need to be careful about it.
And you were talking earlier about difference between adults and children. This, mm-hmm. this is one of those classic things where children really are at a disadvantage, because if you're a baby crawling around on the floor, then you're at very high risk of picking that up and ingesting it and having levels. We do screening when indicated for lead in children. Mm-hmm. And we have very... And the cut points for what's acceptable and not have dropped over the years. We still, fortunately, in Arkansas, have relatively few kids who cross those thresholds, but they do have to be monitored.
How do you tell that they might need to get tested for lead poisoning?
Again, it's exactly what mm-hmm. Mr. Mays was, you know, they live in an older neighborhood or they have some concerns about their houses. Again, you know, if you have a child who's not developing normally, this is typically one of the things that a physician would check mm-hmm. a child to make sure that's not the cause.
And again, you are listening to Speak Up Arkansas with Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families. We are talking about environmental health and its impact on children in the state. If you have any questions for our guests, you can give us a call at 433-0088.
Can I add just one thing? People sometimes worry about lead in the water pipes, mm-hmm. and that is a big issue. Now, one of the things we do that the Department of Health does is it does lead and copper screening on all public water systems in Arkansas.
I didn't know that. That's nice to know.
Yeah. And, you know, we basically this past year had no findings of any lead in any of the systems in Arkansas. So that's good news, but that just tells you about the water quality from the water system to the connect point on your street. So from the street to your house, you could very well have old pipe that has lead in it. And what we learned in Michigan is that when circumstances change, that the lead is leached from the pipes and you can have high concentrations in the water occur. So again, you know, buyer beware when you buy an older home. Mm-hmm. Checking that is something that that might be wise before you purchase a home.
And that brings me to the next question I had. Not everyone can buy a home, especially low-income families. They rent their homes. This past legislative session, my organization, Arkansas Advocates, supported a bill that would have created an implied warranty of habitability for renters in Arkansas. We're the only state in the country that doesn't have one. And the reason we support it was because of children's health. Can you talk about some of the environmental health concerns in children's homes and how that impacts them both in their lives right now, but long term?
Sure, I'll just hit two or three quick things. Again, we've talked about the lead issue. That's certainly number one issue. We've talked about cockroaches, which is really a bad issue in rental properties. Along with cockroaches is the pesticides that go along with it. So there tend to be maybe a little higher use of chemicals in these homes for a variety of reasons for pest control. And then again, I'll bring up again the issues of secondhand smoke. Depending on what the rules are within a particular apartment complex, kids may be getting exposed to secondhand smoke that they get through common HVAC, heat and air systems that cause problems. And then big issue is just, are the facilities provide just the basic, elements you would expect in housing.
Mm-hmm.
Are there leaks? Are there bats in the belfry? Are there, does the water system work? Do the toilets work? All that sort of stuff. So those are huge issues that can impact health.
One of the other things that's frequently overlooked regarding homes, and particularly rental homes and perhaps in low-income areas, is the issue of mold. Mold can be a very unhealthy thing to have in your home, and it can be lethal, although most of the time I don't think it is. It depends on the type of mold you have and how long you've been subjected to it, but it can certainly cause respiratory problems and other types of illnesses. And I think that, and mold is caused by basically water getting into the home and not being properly removed or dried out or treated, or other issues where they just don't remediate it as it should be.
Mm-hmm.
And you add heat to it, and then you get mold. And and that's a big problem, I think, for children. It's mm-hmm. It can, I think, have adverse health effects for them.
Right. Absolutely. And we talked about asthma earlier. Mold is one of the biggest triggers, and most allergists will do a rather large panel of mold testing on kids that have asthma, mm-hmm. and they'll get a lot of positive reactions. And so that's a big issue in humid climates, obviously.
And I spoke with a pediatrician last year, I think it was, and I can't remember what clinic he was with, but he was talking about that as part of the screening process, it's being talked more and more about to include questions about the home situation and possible environmental health hazards there.
Right. Yeah, that's absolutely a standard part of any kind of allergy workup, is what's the immediate environment that the child is living in. So, we talk about other things that are not, I guess, part of this discussion, but, exposure to animals. So dog and cat dander and that kind of thing can be mm-hmm. really rough on some individuals. And again, in rental properties, there may or may not be controls on that.
Mm-hmm. And we've talked about this a bit already, and it's nice to know that the lead levels are being checked in water supplies. But how is Arkansas's water quality, and are there any issues that might affect kids in the state?
As far as I know, the water quality overall in the state of Arkansas is generally pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
The Safe Drinking Water Act required water systems to monitor their water for various contaminants, not for all of them, in fact, not for very many, but just basic ones. And I think that by and large that has worked pretty well. Occasionally you'll see a notice in the paper that's required by the Safe Drinking Water Act to be published by a water supply company, a water supplier, such as, our municipal water suppliers,
mm-hmm.
stating that they may have found some kind of contaminant in the water, but it's generally very low level, generally not harmful, and they generally take care of it right away. So the doctor may know more about that because he is in the health department, and they have a lot to do with the water supplies.
Mm-hmm. Right. So there's required testing on these water supplies to look for bacteria. But there are occasionally instances, and it sometimes happens when someone with a bulldozer hits a water line and you get contamination. There probably are going to be a lot of issues related to the flood systems that we're experiencing right now along the Arkansas River.
Mm-hmm.
There's backup because almost every water system runs on gravity.
Mm-hmm.
And if it doesn't have a place to run into and the water level's higher than normal, then it's going to back up. And We had a hospital evacuated here in Little Rock just a few days ago because of that very issue, that sewage backed up into the hospital as a result of the river rising to the levels that it was. And so before that hospital can get back in working order, there will have to be inspections and documentation that the systems are working well and testing done. So.
And we've talked about climate change several times already. What are some of the specific factors that climate change causes, or climate change causes, that impact kids' health?
Well, I'll take a shot at it. That's a really
everything.
It's really a good question, and it's a difficult question because climate change is a gradual, very gradual process. It's going faster, I think, than the experts thought it would 10, 15 years ago. And I think we are probably approaching a point, or if we haven't already, and I think we probably have approached the point where there are some changes that are going to be inevitable that we probably won't be able to stop, even if our governmental policies were to change to try to do that. Currently, we don't have any governmental policies that are encouraging attempting to prevent climate change. But some of the more obvious ones are that the overall climate will get hotter. That will take place over a period of years. The amount of the increase doesn't sound like much. You're talking about maybe an average of four or five degrees, perhaps, over the long pull. But when the average temperature increases that much, it's very noticeable.
I've heard the analogy of if you get a fever, it's only a couple degrees difference between.
You notice the difference between 98.5 degrees and 105 degrees, mm-hmm. or 102 degrees. That really gets you hot.
Mm-hmm.
And heat is the biggest killer of any of the weather-related deaths that occur in the world. And there are already examples of places in the world where the heat is over 120 degrees Fahrenheit at some point, and that is very hot, and it's hard to sustain life at all when you have that kind of temperature. The thing that bothers me and that I've tried to put a lot of thought to is that the combination of climate change and our population growth and the ability to feed the people in the world, because climate change is going to have an impact on our agriculture, our ability to grow crops, and where we grow crops. And then if we don't have enough food to feed the population growth, it's going to create some serious problems.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I agree completely. That's a really important aspect. There's already been studies that have shown that as the temperature rises just 2 or 3 degrees, that production goes down, but also the nutritional quality of the grains, for instance, rice and wheat, decreases in terms of the amount of protein. And, you know, we don't notice it here because we have this incredible excess of nutrition in the United States, but there are large parts of the world, particularly in equatorial areas, where people are living on the margin, and these little changes are going to have dramatic impact.
Mm-hmm.
The other aspects that affect kids, and again, we've already talked about the fact that kids are smaller, they're not able to dissipate the heat that occurs as the temperature goes up in the air. The other things that we mentioned already are allergies. Those are going to have, we've already seen dramatic changes in the production of allergens in the air.
Why is that?
It's just simply that the temperature range is larger.
Mm-hmm.
The summer seasons when a lot of these things are produced are longer. And so the total amount of ragweed pollen or other pollens in the air is high. So that's going to affect things like asthma and other things. We should mention, you know, the expectation of flooding, fire, drought are all things that we're already beginning to see. The fires in California, the floods here in Arkansas and across the central United States are examples of more dramatic swings in weather.
I heard there was what, 200 tornadoes in the in May?
Yeah. So we're seeing, you know, never before recorded levels of the Arkansas River, et cetera. The other thing I should mention is the consequences of this. So people are having to move from one place or another. We have a large influx of people from the Marshall Islands here in Arkansas. And part of the reason is they live in very shallow islands in out in the Pacific, and they have learned that they can get in to Arkansas for work and for safety. Mm-hmm. And so as the ocean levels are rising, it's increasing the evacuation of these people. We also saw in Katrina, we've got a lot of people who live here now who used to live in the New Orleans area as they're migrating here for a safer, stable environment.
Climate refugees.
Climate refugees, that's exactly right. So, and you mentioned tornadoes, wind is becoming more of an issue. Going back to the oceans for a minute, the other thing about oceans is the ability to sustain ocean life is going down as the oceans go up. So in addition to the supplies of food that we have across the world in terms of grains, our aquaculture is at risk as well. And that's becoming more and more important for us in terms of nutrition.
And again, you're listening to Speak Up Arkansas with Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families. We are talking about environmental health issues impacting kids, and right now specifically climate change. If you have any questions for our guests, you can give us a call at 433-0088. One other thing that's in the news a lot right now is the what seems to be decreasing vaccination rates among children. Would that be considered an environmental health issue, or is that's too far off the nebulous definition?
Yeah, it's probably further away. I think it's more personal health and public health than environmental health. That said, there are a number of vaccines that we use for mosquito-borne diseases, and for instance, yellow fever. And again, we think there's some people that think that the spread of Zika, which occurred a few years ago, was related to climate change or environmental changes in terms of deforestation and other things that promoted mosquito growth. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, the way that we manage the environment may help us in terms of our needs for vaccination, but when people fail to get immunizations, it can be a real problem.
And it seems too, if we do get more climate refugees and things like that, it would become an increased problem.
Probably the most worrisome example of that is the Ebola outbreak in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Remember that a lot of the reasons that we think Ebola is developing is because they're moving in and deforesting areas, and it's disrupting the normal life of bats and some other mammals that carry Ebola, and they're having more and more contact with humans. Believe it or not, you know, thankfully we have a vaccine this time around, but people in the DRC, the Democratic Republic of Congo, are resisting the vaccine because of vaccine hesitancy and fears that it may be harmful and undermining our ability to control that outbreak right now. So there's almost nothing that environmental change doesn't touch in terms of our health.
And there was a big push a few years ago to make products BPA-free. There's a lot of concerns about BPA being in common products like bottled water and cans and tin cans and things like that. we're holding up a bottle of water right now. What should parents be on the lookout in terms of chemicals? I mean, products have gone BPA free, and they advertise that as a selling point, but I've also heard BPA free products may not be so great either. So what should parents be looking out for when they go to the grocery store or buying baby cribs and things like that?
I'm not going to drink any more water out of this plastic bottle. I think, based on the research that I've done on this subject, that it's one of those issues I was talking about at the beginning of the show, that where we buy products in our grocery store, they're there, we assume they're safe. And because most of the things that we buy in the grocery store and in the other markets are generally safe, and we depend on that. We depend on various agencies to protect us from that. I'm told that the chemical that we're referring to in these products can be, or perhaps, freed up by microwave or by heating them up in some form. So obviously you would not want to use these plastics that have this product in them, the chemical in them, for microwaving food, because that would tend to enable the chemical to be freed up and get into the food, mm-hmm. or even put in a dishwasher perhaps. The best thing to do would maybe be to use glass or other material for a metal perhaps, or glass for storage of food and perhaps for cooking it. That might be a better way of avoiding the problem, at least somewhat. You may not be able to avoid plastics. You can't avoid plastics in going through life.
I've also seen a commercial about that.
Yes, and there are some risks we assume, whether we want to or not. We assume certain risks. When you get into a car, you assume the risk that something could happen to you driving down the street. The same's true of buying a product in a store. You think, you hope, you don't think about it usually, but you assume the risk that product is going to be safe, or it might not be.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you do the best you can. You do the research. People should read up on these things. Whenever they hear a warning, they should find out what the warning is about and what the problem is with the product, and try to avoid it. But a lot of people don't do that. A lot of people don't do that kind of research. But if they hear something on television about a product being questioned or recalled, they should look into it and find out what it's about so they can make intelligent choices.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think what Richard's getting at is one of the fundamental principles that we all need to fight for, which is to make sure that the regulatory bodies that protect our food and our environment are able to do their job. There's some I've had the opportunity to visit the laboratories at the FDA and some of these other really critical bodies that protect us. And there's some incredible scientists. They're doing great work there. As long as we can keep these institutions intact mm-hmm. and doing their jobs, and as long as they do not fall prey to political direction, as long as they're properly funded, then I think we can relax a little bit. And I do caution parents to not overread the internet too much. The truth is, real science that you can stand on has to go through many iterations before we're absolutely convinced about what the right thing to do is. So like you said, you know, you read, well, BPA is bad, but then the alternatives to BPA are bad. And I think that, you know, as long as our institutions that monitor safety are funded and able to do their work to monitor drugs, food, and environmental things, and they're not finding aberrations, then I think we can go about our daily lives without being a little bit paranoid about every new thing that comes up.
Yeah, and that's a good point. There's a lot of bad information out there, a lot of misinformation that's causing a lot of serious health problems for kids. Where can parents go to get, I mean, some of those FDA studies are extremely technical. Where can they go to get information that's understandable?
Right. Well, I think that, and again, no system is perfect,
yeah.
but ideally what we rely on is the FDA to withdraw products mm-hmm. that are not safe. And so you'll hear in the news, and you may, if you read about it, great. If you don't read about it, the product ideally will not be on the market and accessible to you. We've gotten much better at sharing data and being more transparent with it. And I know at the health department, we really strive to make sure that we can communicate as broadly as we can when there's a perceived danger. And hopefully people in Arkansas have confidence that we provide that information freely and honestly and accurately to them. Again, nothing's perfect. Every once in a while, something's going to slip through and cause some harm. But in general, we live in a state where it's pretty safe to go outdoors and be in the environment and drink the water and breathe the air and eat most of the food. Now, what we do is we eat too much of the food, and that's a whole separate conversation, but that's much more of a threat to your health than some of the other things that we've talked about this evening.
Especially in Arkansas, we're probably the most obese state in the country, as I understand it, or in the top two or three, and I don't know the relationship between obese parents and obese children, but your focus is on children, and I've seen a lot of families who all look like they had been overeating, including the children. And so, you know, that's a big problem, and obesity can cause a lot of health problems.
Yeah, so if you focus on the really critical issues of health, you know, your appetite, your level of exercise, safety, you know, wearing a seatbelt. Not everybody wears a seatbelt, and that's a terrible thing. You know, kids need to wear bike helmets. There's a lot of really common sense things that protect you from the risks that are the most likely things to cause you harm.
And in terms of harm, for pregnant mothers, we've talked about how children are very susceptible to environmental health hazards. How susceptible are babies in the womb to environmental health hazards, and are there specific concerns for pregnant mothers that they might have elevated risks?
Right. So just to follow up on the point I just made for pregnancy.
Oh, we've just got a call in.
Okay.
You're on the air. What's your question?
Yeah, I live up by Deer, Arkansas here, and I listen to your program when I can get it in, and I just happened to tune in just a little bit ago, but I'm glad to hear these fellows talk about the food situation, because it seems like all you ever hear about climate change is that, you know, they're going to have to build the infrastructure up to handle the increased levels of water on the coast and all that, and that's totally missing the point. It's the food is going to be a critical problem, because the growing seasons right now, you know, they can't plant corn, they can't plant soybeans, everything. I do, you know, we do self-reliant gardening up here and stuff like that, and everything's screwed up. You can't even figure out when to plant things, and everything's totally off the charts, and I'm just glad to hear somebody actually addressing what the real problem is going to be with people not being able to eat.
Thanks. That's a great point. This is Gary Wheeler again. I think that we are very, very fortunate as far as climate change goes, because we live in the temperate zones, and even here you're identifying problems that people are having. Along the equator and along the poles, there are dramatic changes going on that are completely disrupting society, and it's having an extraordinary impact. Thousands of people are dying because of drought issues and malnutrition, and so much of it is related to what you just mentioned, the food supply.
This is Richard again. I've learned after 40 years of practicing environmental law that everything in the environment is related. It may not appear that way to begin with, but it's kind of like one of these blow-up dolls. You punch in one place and it pooches out in another place, and you don't know what that place is going to be. A change of a few degrees temperature can affect as Gary said, growing seasons and the type of crops that you grow. It also can affect the amount of water that has to be applied. And it could cause water shortages in the area where that we're in, for example. The aquifer over in eastern Arkansas is continuously going down due to the tremendous demands that are made on the aquifer for rice farming and other things. So, you know, it could cause drastic changes in the amount of crops that we produce and the type of crops we produce. And it's very unpredictable in that regard because we don't really know. We know that climate change is occurring, but we really don't know what the impacts are going to be and where they're going to occur. So it makes it very difficult to predict.
Oh, we have another caller. You're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Yeah, I live in Central Park, Arkansas. Work for a nonprofit. I can attest to a lot of the things that the two gentlemen have been talking about today. You know, just issues in the home. I work on a lot of low income to moderate income housing in what I do. And, the environmental situation they go through, whether it be lead paint, mold, cockroaches, whatever you want to name, I've seen it. But you start talking about issues with the obesity and things like that. There's so many things wrapped up in that. Talking about the family. Well, you're talking about low-income to moderate-income people. You know, you can't go out and buy 500 crisp apples for $10 when that's what you could be eating. You can buy a box of Little Debbie's for $2. So there's more than just a food shortage issue, or will be a food shortage issue. The other thing about growing rice in Arkansas, let's talk about how much rice stays in Arkansas. So whenever we reach a food shortage, and we start just growing food for ourselves, there won't be a shortage. So there may be a shortage on income because you're not, you know, transporting it out to other countries, but you'll be able to eat. The whole climate change thing, it's just a pinning tail. You can't tell what's going. Like he said, if you punch it somewhere, you don't know where it's going to pooch out. And the thing is, it's just all speculation. It was speculation back 100 years ago when they were saying the same thing. We had the Depression. We made it through that. We'll make it through this.
So a couple points there. One's the related to low-income people can't afford healthier food, and so they're more likely to have to eat unhealthy foods that are less nutritious that would be more likely to make them obese. And then also he says that we'll at least be able to eat rice if climate change hits.
Yeah, I think there's some truth there in that the National Oceanic and Aerospace Administration has predicted that Arkansas is actually going to fare a little better during climate change than a lot of other places. But it is the really, really poor people who are living on the edge around the equator who are currently dying from malnutrition. This is not a speculative thing. This is something that's going on already. The high heat that Richard alluded to took thousands of lives in India in the last few years that are clearly an aberration from normal there. So I think it may be a mistake to say that that there's not climate change things going on right now. I think there's plenty of evidence that there are.
Everybody has an opinion on this, and everybody can disagree honestly. I have a law partner who I was discussing this with a couple of days ago, and he's very skeptical about whether there's climate change going on, and I consider him to be a very intelligent guy. I just disagree with him. I think it is. And I think that those who deny that are basically going to, be disappointed in their opinion. But it's going to take a long time to see any change, any substantial changes.
We have another caller. You're on the air.
Yes. My name is Patricia, and I agree definitely 1,000,000,000% on climate change, and I find it absolutely beyond reason that it is not believed by certain people when it's been scientifically proven over and over and over and over again. And second of all, no one ever mentions or talks about the geoengineering of the skies, the chemtrails in the sky that are being sprayed every single day with barium, ammonium, all kinds of toxic chemicals. And that's what's causing, basically they're controlling the weather. They're blocking the sun because of climate change. But they are not true clouds, and you can see them, because if they were coming out, if they were just coming out of jets, then they would dissipate.
Okay.
But they don't.
Thank you for calling. I think that and I'll let who would like to respond to that?
Well, you know, the contrails of jets, the path that they leave, the smoke they leave is made up of chemicals, and it's also made up of water vapor and other things. I don't know that it's obviously, I would prefer they not leave them, because it's a form of pollution, but I don't think it's going to, it's in itself, it's not going to cause a major increase in climate change. It's one thing that just contributes to it, but it's probably not a major contributor.
Right. I mean, I think the thing that most climate scientists agree on is that fossil fuels are the main cause of climate change. And clearly, air transportation is one of the biggest consumers of fossil fuels. Yeah. So I think in that sense, it probably does contribute, probably not as much as the cars out there on the road. So, but I think you've raised an important point about fossil fuel contributions.
So we just have a minute left. Really quickly, where can parents, teachers, whomever, go to get resources and to learn ways to make sure children have healthy environments?
So I will promote the Center for Disease Control and Prevention. The CDC website is a highly reliable source of information that you can search for environmental issues, whether it's lead or air quality or other things. That's one source I would use. Richard?
Well, everybody uses the internet these days to get their information, and that's all well and good. The internet is a wonderful thing. It can also be a very misleading or destructive thing as well. People are going to go to the internet to get information. They just need to go to authoritative websites so that they get information that has been researched and has a good scientific basis.
So not Reddit or a blog.
That's correct, yes.
Well, thank you all so much. We will be back next month when we'll talk about issues impacting immigrant kids in Arkansas. Thank you all so much.
Hi, this is Alanis Morissette, and you're listening to KABF 88.3 in Little Rock, the voice of the people.
Today on Wings, trade unions versus gender-based violence.
We're here today to get practical.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings. There's
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
The International Labor Organization began discussing a convention on eliminating violence and harassment at work in 2020.